Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
President Obama urges world leaders to join the fight against the Islamic State, and prolonged droughts threaten a renewed famine in Somalia. I'm Frances Alonso reporting from Washington. U.S. President Barack Obama is urging world leaders to join him in efforts to degrade and destroy the Islamic State. In an address today to the U.N. General Assembly in New York, Mr. Obama said the group has terrorized innocent people in Iraq and Syria.
America and our allies will support the people of Ukraine as they develop their democracy and economy. We will reinforce our NATO allies and uphold our commitment to collective self-defense. We will impose a cost on Russia for aggression, and we will counter falsehoods with the truth. And we call upon others to join us on the right side of history. For while small gains can be won at the barrel of a gun, they will ultimately be turned back if enough voices support the freedom of nations and peoples to make their own decisions.
Speaking at the United Nations General Assembly in New York, the president blamed sectarian conflicts around the world for creating fertile recruiting ground for groups like the Islamic State, which has taken over parts of Syria and Iraq. Earlier in the opening session, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called on world leaders to have a frank discussion about the causes of extremism in the region. Droughts and heavy fighting have brought Somalia, close to another bout of famine just 3 years after food shortages killed 260,000 people in the troubled Horn of Africa land. The United Nations has begun urgent humanitarian aid deliveries to parts of Somalia that previously were controlled by armed insurgents. This is VOA News. A Jordanian court has acquitted radical preacher Abu Qatada on charges related to a plot to attack tourists during New Year celebrations in 2000. The court ruled today that there was not enough evidence against him, and he was later released. In June, the preacher was acquitted in a separate case, which involved charges of conspiring to carry out a terror attack on an American school in Amman. India has successfully placed a satellite into orbit around Mars, putting the nation into an elite club of deep space explorers that so far includes the United States, Russia, and Europe. The Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi announced the success of the Mars Orbiter mission today, alongside scientists with the Indian Space Research Organization at their command center in the southern city of Bangalore. With health clinics closed and people afraid to come in for treatment, Liberia's National AIDS Commission says they're now going door to door to get people to take their antiretroviral medications. All eyes are on Ebola, but experts say there are other deadly diseases being overlooked in the crisis. Jennifer Lazuda reports.
An estimated 45% of healthcare facilities in Liberia's Montserrato County, home to the capital Monrovia, have been shut down since the Ebola outbreak first hit the country in March. Many people are afraid to seek out treatment for fear of catching Ebola. Those who come are often turned away, as the few open clinics are overcrowded and understaffed. This has had a strong impact on the country's HIV-positive population. The World Health Organization says more than 1,500 Liberians have died of Ebola. But healthcare workers say other deadly diseases such as malaria and childhood diarrhea must not be forgotten. Jennifer Lazuda for VOA News, Dakar.
30 children have been rescued and more than 1,000 people arrested across Europe in a massive international crackdown on organized crime. The operation, dubbed Archimedes, involved police from all 28 EU countries, as well as officers from the United States, Colombia, and Australia. It targeted criminal activities including human trafficking, drug smuggling, cybercrime, and illegal immigration. The Europol chief, Rob Wainwright, called the scale of the effort unprecedented. The operation took place from September 15th to the 23rd. U.S. sales of newly built homes surged 18% in August. Today's report from the Commerce Department says if sales continued at that pace for a year, 500,000 homes would get new owners. It's the fastest rate of new home sales since 2008, and it's a hopeful sign of recovery in the housing market. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The only language understood by killers like this is the language of force. Those who have joined ISIL should leave the battlefield while they can.
That's U.S. President Barack Obama addressing the U.N. General Assembly. Details next.
Also in the news, Boko Haram insurgents have increased cross-border attacks as they pursue refugees from northern Nigeria who fled into Cameroon.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, U.S. President Barack Obama appealed to the world at this year's U.N. General Assembly session to join together to defeat Islamist militants. VOA White House correspondent Luis Ramirez is traveling with the president and reports from U.N. headquarters in New York.
President Barack Obama began his speech saying the world is at a crossroads between war and peace. He said that although the United States is leading the fight against Islamic State militants, it cannot defeat them alone.
Now, ultimately, the task of rejecting sectarianism and rejecting extremism is a generational task. And a task for the people of the Middle East themselves. No external power can bring about a transformation of hearts and minds.
The U.S. leader came to the United Nations with a message that America retains its leadership role in the world, as evidenced this week by coordinated airstrikes against militants and terror groups in Syria. The strikes were led by the United States with the participation of five Arab nations. Since U.S. forces, though not combat troops, are returning to the region, the president sought to reassure all nations that the U.S. role from now on will be different from the lengthy invasions of the past.
But America will be a respectful and constructive partner. We will neither tolerate terrorist safe havens nor act as an occupying power.
While his speech focused largely on the fight against Islamist militants, Mr. Obama also called for world action to improve health systems and to stop the Ebola virus. There, too, the president emphasized U.S. leadership, the massive U.S. military effort in West Africa to fight the Ebola epidemic. On Ukraine, the president criticized Russia for continuing to arm separatists and send Russian troops into the country. The United States has been at the forefront of a multinational wave of sanctions against Russia, but Mr. Obama said a recent ceasefire agreement in Ukraine offers hope for peace if Moscow chooses that path. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, at the United Nations.
African leaders are also addressing the General Assembly this week. This morning, the president of Uganda, Yoweri Museveni, told the body that Africa was in the grips of what he called a pseudo-ideology that includes chauvinism and sectarianism. In a veiled reference to terrorism, he said that's even worse when outsiders take advantage of the situation. But he also spoke of the advantages of working in coalitions and partnerships.
Together with our neighbors, we have integrated our markets in the East African community and in COMESA. We also partner in common security solutions with our neighbors. Therefore, Africa, as well as the individual African countries, are becoming more credible partners with any serious actors beyond our shores. Uganda needs and welcomes investments, trade access, tourists, and in some cases, security partnerships that are approved by the African Union for our partners, the world, many of whom are members of the United Nations.
Also addressing the assembly today are the heads of state of Liberia, Morocco, and Mauritania. On Tuesday, leaders from Cameroon, Ghana, Ethiopia, Zimbabwe, and Ethiopia speak before the world body.
The Guinean government says it is sending 2,000 young people into communities to go door-to-door teaching families about Ebola. The initiative comes after the brutal killings of eight people as they traveled in the southeast as part of a government convoy to raise awareness about the virus. Karim Kamara reports from Conakry on how the government is modifying its strategy in light of the killings.
Guinea's government says what happened in the village of Wome last week must not happen again. Locals launched a deadly attack on a government convoy traveling in the southeast on Ebola. killing a total of 8 health workers and journalists. Government spokesperson Albert Damantan Kamara tells VOA 20 people have been arrested and the investigation continues. He also says they are making some changes in their Ebola strategy.
Ce qui s'est passé à Wobe donc est vraiment inédit et surprenant. Qu'à cela ne tienne.
Kamara says what happened in Wome goes beyond description and comes as a surprise. He says they are reinforcing security around the awareness campaign teams to make them properly secured. He says security forces will be deployed in all areas where Ebola is being treated. He notes security forces will not be quarantining any areas. This mission will be to protect health workers. He did not specify the number of soldiers and police. Local organizations are calling upon government to intensify its Ebola awareness campaign. Churches and mosques around the country have joined in an education effort at the request of the government. Yet resistance and hostility to health workers still exist, particularly in the southeast, where this regional outbreak is believed to have started in December. The Minister of Youth is training 2,100 young people to embark on a nationwide door-to-door awareness campaign next week.
Ces jeunes seront feront de porte-à-porte, ils auront des kits.
The Minister of Youth, Mustafa Naite, says these young people will be giving out materials to enable family members know how to protect themselves from Ebola. He says to gather statistics on what happens on the ground to enable us know which homes we have visited and where volunteers face resistance and refusals. His announcement comes just days after Sierra Leone completed a similar exercise. Health authorities said the three-day campaign was a success and more than 1 million homes were visited. Naite says unlike Sierra Leone, Guinea is not ordering people to stay confined to their homes. Ebola has killed more than 600 people in Guinea and more than 2,800 across the region overall. Karim Kamara for VOA News, Conakry.
While efforts continue to contain the Ebola outbreak among people in West Africa, researchers have a new technique to study Ebola among the great apes. Thousands of the primates are believed to have died from the disease in recent decades. The research could help predict where Ebola outbreaks might occur among humans. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
Researchers have been studying Ebola in the wild for 30 years. But they say there's still much they do not know. It's difficult to safely capture wild animals in Africa's rainforests, let alone take blood and tissue samples from them. Dr. Kenneth Cameron is a Wildlife Conservation Society field veterinarian who took part in the research. He spoke from the Republic of Congo capital, Brazzaville.
We've been doing Ebola ecology studies for a long period of time, trying to further determine where Ebola comes from, how it spills over from presumed reservoir species to great apes in particular, and what effect it has specifically on those great ape populations. We know that it has some pretty devastating effects on great ape populations. We believe well in excess of 80% mortality when there is an Ebola epizootic amongst great apes.
An epizootic is an epidemic among animals. In the current West Africa Ebola outbreak, fruit bats are the prime suspect for being the source of the virus. Fruit bats are known as reservoir species. That is, they can carry the Ebola virus and yet not get sick. Cameron says it's not the same with great apes.
We believe that Ebola virus has killed probably tens of thousands of great apes in the past 20 to 30 years in Central Africa. So it's those populations that we're concerned about. And what we wanted to find out is what individuals amongst those species or what populations of gorillas and chimpanzees have actually been exposed to Ebola virus.
Researchers believe great apes can become infected by being in close quarters with other animals that have similar feeding habits, animals that may carry the virus.
They'll be eating out of the same tree at the same time, for example. We typically call those trees magnet trees because when a magnet tree starts fruiting, for example, a ficus tree, the figs that are produced attract all kinds of animals, so many different species, including both the reservoirs and the susceptible hosts for Ebola virus, that is to say the fruit bats and gorillas and chimps.
Infected bats may contaminate the tree's fruit with their saliva and spread the virus through urine and feces on the ground. Researchers say that understanding Ebola's distribution in space and time is a matter of great importance to both human health and conservation communities. So what is the new technique to study Ebola among great apes? The answer, studying fecal samples. That's right, primate droppings.
What we're looking for is just feces, fresh feces that have been dropped by great apes. Great apes move around feeding and whatnot throughout the day. They obviously drop their feces as they go. We typically send teams out in what we call directed reconnaissance walk surveys. So it's just a survey where they go and they just wander through the forest in areas where we know there are great apes looking for the feces, or they use GPS coordinates, compass coordinates, to direct themselves from one point to the next, looking for feces as they go.
Depending how fresh it is, it's considered fresh if it's 12 to 24 hours old. The fecal sample is frozen and sent for testing back in the United States.
Unfortunately, we're not set up to be running the testing here in country. Our partners in developing this technique at the National Institutes of Health would run them in their laboratory. So usually from the time of collection to the time of testing to know whether or not they had been exposed is usually weeks. We're hoping to transfer that technology to our laboratory here in Brazzaville in the Republic of Congo, where we can do the testing on a much more timely basis.
Apes are like humans in that they develop antibodies during a viral infection. It's not known how long those antibodies remain in apes that survive infection or whether they can protect an ape from future outbreaks, but the samples may help predict potential Ebola hot zones.
A lot of disease projections, where diseases may erupt, comes out of mathematical epidemiological models that are conducted. We need more data to feed into these models. If we don't have good data fed into them, the results that we get out are not going to be meaningful. The data that we're collecting here can feed into those mathematical models. It can help us predict where Ebola may occur next by determining which great apes have already been infected, so we know Ebola has been in a given region.
The Wildlife Conservation Society field veterinarian says, typically in Central Africa, human Ebola outbreaks follow epizootic outbreaks. Contaminated bushmeat is usually to blame. Cameron says when researchers found evidence of Ebola among dead great apes, they educated local communities about the disease and asked them to report any wildlife carcasses they found so they could be examined for Ebola. Health officials were also notified. Studying fecal samples could create a better early warning system. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. In an address to the United Nations General Assembly today, U.S. President Barack Obama emphasized the United States' commitment to problem-solving through coalition building. And Boko Haram insurgents have increased cross-border attacks as they pursue refugees from northern Nigeria who fled into Cameroon. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
A new report highlights effective interventions seeking an end to child marriage, a harmful practice that turns 15 million girls worldwide into child brides every year. The International Center for Research on Women, ICRW, launched the report in Washington and hosted a panel discussion that included international NGOs and humanitarian agencies. The groups explored successful programs in Bangladesh, Egypt, Ethiopia, and India that focused on empowering girls, preventing child marriage, and mitigating its harmful effects when it does occur. Child marriage is also a topic of discussion at the 2014 UN General Assembly, now meeting in New York City. Ann Warner is the Senior Gender and Youth Specialist for the International Center for Research on Women. She emphasized the importance of keeping child marriage at the forefront of international agendas.
Child marriage is a practice that affects about 15 million girls every year. That's 15 million girls whose human rights are violated when they are forced into marriage. Not only are those individual girls' lives compromised, their health, their futures, their aspirations, and their well-being, but that also has really profound implications for the health of their families, their future children, and the communities. So we know that child marriage not only affects individuals, but it has implications for social, economic, and political development, because when girls are married as children, they're less equipped to participate fully in the economic and social life of their communities.
You launched a report this month, a recent report that highlights ways to prevent and end child marriage. What are some of these ways that you all have put together?
What we looked at in this report was a few programs that are working with girls themselves. So girls either who are at risk of being married as children or girls who are already married. And these programs work with girls usually in group settings and provide them with a variety of information, skills, and social support. And what we found is that these kinds of activities for girls really do help them a lot. First of all, they help transform girls' views of themselves and what they are capable of. And they also help to transform other people's views and their homes and their communities of what they are capable of. And then they also introduce alternatives and other opportunities for girls, such as going back to school or staying in school or seeking economic opportunities like small income generating activities or doing savings and loans with their peers. So those three pathways, the self-transformation, the transformation of how others see them, and these alternatives and additional opportunities, we found can really improve girls' capabilities to make and act on strategic life choices.
It seems like this is also a way to empower girls as well, especially those in developing countries. Because of culture, they don't really have a choice in some matters.
These are situations where poverty plays a huge role in the choices that girls have for themselves and that their families have for them. We know that parents everywhere want the best for their children. They want them to be educated and to be happy. But in contexts where there are few alternatives for girls, extra support is often required to equip girls with this information, with new skills, and with social support, and also to support and engage parents in the process of helping to support their daughters and their sons in a different pathway.
How does a girl overcome the trauma of being married at a very, very young age?
This is something that is extremely important and something that we need to understand better. We need more research on the mental health consequences of child marriage. It really ranges widely depending on the age at which a girl is married and the circumstances of her marriage. Everybody is an individual and has individual experiences, but we do know that when girls are pulled out of school and deprived of their opportunities to really live out their dreams, that that has an important toll on their lives. We've also, though, met a lot of amazing young women, either who are currently married or who, as children, or who were married as child brides, who are really doing an incredible amount to transform their lives and those of their children.
There was a session at the UN General Assembly that focused on early child marriage and ending it. What came out of this session? I know that you all were a part of this.
There's fortunately been a lot of attention to child marriage at the UN General Assembly, including some events hosted by ICRW and other partners. And our goal is to make sure that ending child marriage is a priority in the next set of development goals that are being shaped right now.
Anne Warner is the Senior Gender and Youth Specialist for the International Center for Research on Women. She spoke with me from Washington.
The United Nations Refugee Agency says Boko Haram insurgents have increased cross-border attacks as they pursue refugees from northern Nigeria seeking safety in Cameroon. The UNHCR says it is stepping up efforts to move the refugees away from the volatile border to a safer area inland. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency reports around 100 Nigerians are crossing into Cameroon every day. But it says this does not guarantee their safety. Over the past 2 weeks, it says cross-border fighting has worsened. UNHCR spokeswoman Melissa Fleming tells VOA that Boko Haram insurgents in hot pursuit of the refugees fleeing for their lives are attacking and shelling Cameroonian villages located along the border with Nigeria.
There was a recent incident where Boko Haram attacked a series of villages in Cameroon along the border with Nigeria, and they even burnt down 10 churches. So, of course, even the villagers, the residents there, are fleeing these attacks. 8 people were killed in one place, and there have been robberies as well. So it is a volatile situation along the border there, and people are terrified.
Fleming says UNHCR staff is urgently trying to move the refugees away from this dangerous border. The agency already has relocated more than 8,600 Nigerians to the Minnawal refugee camp over the past 2 weeks. It is in the process of moving 5,000 others away from the border town of Fotokol. The UNHCR spokeswoman says it is critical this be done quickly as the refugees are living in absolute fear. Besides these dangers, she says living conditions in Fotokol are dire. She notes refugees are living in overcrowded classrooms and in makeshift shelters with no basic facilities or health care. She says they rely on local authorities and villagers for food. Fleming says the heavy influx of refugees is straining the facilities at Minnawal camp. She says the camp is overcrowded and needs to be expanded urgently.
So many people are sick. There's a real high prevalence of respiratory infections among the children because during their time spent on the open border, they were exposed to wind and cold. Also, many children are arriving malnourished. Too large numbers for our comfort. We're doing our best to address that problem. Desperately trying to add clean water to the camp and latrines and showers so that we can contain any health risk. Cholera in this part of Cameroon is endemic.
Cameroon currently hosts more than 43,700 Nigerians. This number is expected to grow as Boko Haram continues its ferocious onslaught against the people of northern Nigeria. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Chaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.boaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Here's advice from the international medical group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, to help limit the spread of the Ebola virus. First, do not touch or eat the bushmeat of animals from the forest. Avoid contact with blood, urine, feces, vomit, sweat, tears, saliva, mucus, or genital secretions of an Ebola patient. Do not handle the bodies of the patients who have died of Ebola. Inform the nearest health center of any suspected Ebola cases. Seek health care immediately because infected people have a much higher survival rate if they receive early treatment at a health facility compared to staying home. These are recommendations from the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, on how to prevent the spread of Ebola.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.